Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's podcast, we talk about the 37 and 40 Detroit Pistons who refused to lose late in the season. Ben Gulker and I talk about the dual impact of Reggie Jackson returning, Blake Griffin's injury opening up time for Henry Ellenson, and we relitigate quote-unquote Chauncey Billups, general manager of the Detroit Pistons. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, like, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the post on Detroit Bad Boys. It's the best way for us to build the podcast according to what the fans want. In order to do that, though, you have to be following DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be, because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. I am pleased to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. Ben, how are you?
Better than I would have been if that fourth quarter collapse had actually happened. We're recording this right after the Nets game. I was a little worried there, but five in a row in spite of a strange fourth quarter. And Reggie Jackson kind of took over the fourth quarter. So shades of him being his old self. So all things considered, pretty good.
I was just gonna walk into it. Yeah, 108-96 win over Brooklyn. Andre got ejected in the third quarter after a shoving match with Quincy Acey. That was interesting to say the least. The Pistons are now, like you said, on a 5-game winning streak and 5-1 since Reggie Jackson, or 6-1 rather, now that Reggie Jackson's been back. You tweeted about this earlier today. When you've been watching the Pistons, what seems more important to you now that Reggie's back? How he's integrated himself with the starters and the chemistry he has with Andre Drummond. I think we're finally seeing like some of the lobs that I think a lot of people expected when earlier in the year, and or Ish Smith being just this huge catalyst for the Pistons play off the bench and reminding us why he's better as a backup than a starter.
Yeah, I think it's yes, right? Like, I mean, it's both of those things. The stat I tweeted out was something that just shocked me when I looked at the numbers preparing a little bit for tonight. This doesn't include tonight's game, and tonight's game, Reggie played really well. So this might change this stat a bit because we're talking about just a handful of games here. But with Reggie Jackson on the court since he's returned from injury, the Pistons are +4.5 per 100 possessions, which is really good. I mean, that would make them one of the top teams in the East. So better. The Pistons have clearly been better with Reggie back so far. But the shocker is how well the bench has played. They're over 18 points per 100 possessions positive. So a net rating of +18 with Reggie Jackson off the floor. So, yeah, some of that's due to Ish Smith, certainly. Some of that's due to the rest of the bench playing really well over the last 6-7 games. And I think part of it is to say, like, when you look at the drop-off from a healthy Reggie Jackson to a healthy Ish Smith, it's the sort of normal drop-off you'd expect in the NBA, right? You've got a quality, solid, good starting point guard and a competent, solid backup point guard, and both of them seem to work in their respective lineups. But when the Pistons haven't had Reggie this season, and this is in contrast a little bit to last season, you go from Ish Smith to who knows what, right? I mean, we're pulling up guys from the G League, we're playing guys out of position. So it's, I think, all of those things. Reggie is definitely playing better as a point guard, even though some of his individual numbers are down a little bit. I think you can see the pick and roll is very, very different. People have to respect Reggie's shot. People have to respect Reggie, not only his shot from the perimeter, but they also have to respect his shot inside. So that creates lanes and space for guys like Blake and Andre. And then Ish Smith, for, you know, reasons that I don't totally have my head around yet, he just seems to really mesh well with this second unit. They seem to play really well with him. I think it makes a ton of sense for him in that 20-minute-a-night sort of role, pushing the pace and probing the the B squad, right? Probing the backup defense of the opposition. And tonight was sort of a showcase for that. Both guys were absolutely fantastic. And Reggie in particular was important in the fourth quarter to sort of stabilize and get some big buckets and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I talked about last week was that you can really like see Ish trying to hold something in reserve for later in the game when he's a starter. And when he's playing off the bench, he just throws it all out there on the court. He's going full speed, full bore all the time. And I think that makes a huge difference in his game, especially when we'll talk about this a little bit later. But Ish is starting to shoot threes more, and I'm super excited about it. All right. So Blake Griffin suffered a minor ankle injury, I think, against the Lakers, probably from all those times that Julius Randle bowled him over. But he's been out of the lineup for the last three games now. And that's unfortunate. You know, we really wanted to see the interplay between he, Reggie, and Andre. But what that's opened up is an opportunity for Henry Ellenson to be a part of the regular rotation. Now, I've said before that I've not been a huge fan of Henry Ellenson as an asset. You know, I think he's valuable as a former first round pick, but I don't think he'll ever be as good as he needs to be defensively to play in the league. And offensively, I think it remains to be seen. However, he's been playing pretty well, I think, in these last three games, and it's really surprised me. Have you kind of been surprised by the way Henry's playing, or do you think this is what we would see from him on a normal basis?
No, I am surprised. I agree with you. I think he is a little bit slow of foot defensively, and he's also he gets pushed around, right? He gets bodied by some of these bigger fours in the NBA, so he's got some real work to do in order to really stick, especially defensively. The thing about Henry is that it's really been feast and famine with him, right? Like, there are nights when he plays where he looks completely lost, and you just wonder, how did this guy ever make it in the NBA? And then the other nights, he plays like he's played the last two or three games, where you wonder, why isn't this guy getting more minutes, right? So it seems like he's on, or he's just completely off. Some of that might be because, you know, a lot of the times he's only getting one or two or three minutes stints at a time in garbage time. But yeah, if what we're seeing over the last three is legitimate development that's happened over the course, you know, of this NBA season, man, that would be huge because, you know, we've talked about the Pistons' salary profile moving forward. They're not going to have a ton of flexibility. So they really need Stanley Johnson to take a step. They really need Luke Kennard to take a step. And I hadn't even been considering Ellenson. But if he does take a step, man, that goes a long way toward flushing out the rotation that's going to be difficult to do otherwise. So I'm still a skeptic. I'm with you. I'm not convinced yet. But, you know, as a fan, it's been great to see, and I'm cheering him on. And you know, for as long as Blake is out, he should be able to get his 10 to 15 minutes a game. And that should give the fans a little bit of an idea of what to expect, and hopefully Van Gundy as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that the Blake injury advanced a little bit of what we were going to see at the end of the year. With the Pistons' impending elimination from the playoffs, there's no real reason to not play Henry Ellenson if the games don't really mean anything. And so I'm grateful, I think, to see this kind of early look at him, this look and see what he's got. He still doesn't quite know where to be defensively and how to get there. And so, you know, you still see him be late on rotations and everything, but I'm still encouraged by his skill set. He can bring the ball up the court a little bit. He can ostensibly shoot. They had him in the game at the end of the fourth quarter to shoot free throws in tonight's win against Brooklyn. And I thought that was pretty funny. No Andre, you got put Henry Ellenson in at center. But yeah, I'm excited to get this look at Henry because, like you said, you know, I'd expect Tolliver's on a 1-year deal. I don't know if they'll find a way to bring him back. But John Luehr has not been a factor this year, but is obviously moving forward going to be a part of the Pistons rotation. But if Henry can step up and be a rotation player, I think that's very huge for some of the flexibility expansion that the Pistons have moving forward. Yeah. So with the win tonight, the Pistons are what, 37-40? Only 3 games under .500? That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Their playoff hopes are still flickering with the dimmest of embers. Milwaukee is playing Denver right now and up, I think, double digits early in the second quarter. So we'll keep an eye on that. But, you know, I think a more realistic goal for this Pistons team this season is to go 500 or 41. To do that, including the win today, the Pistons would have to go 5-1 the rest of the way. Or wait, no. Yeah, 5-1, which is, you know, completely possible. They only play one more non-tanking team between now and the end of the season, and that's Toronto, who may or may not have something to play for by that time. 500 would be an improvement of 3 or 4 games over last year. It wouldn't be a playoff team, but it would definitely show that, like, this was not, despite all appearances from late January to mid March, like, this was not a bad team, and it would put the cap on what's been a very roller coaster year. If you think about where the Pistons began the season, even coming into the preseason, and where they are now, you just think about all the things that have happened. It's been really quite a ride for the Pistons. So, Ben, does 500 mean anything to you? Do you care if the Pistons make it to 41-41?
I'm almost always on the side of the debate that says winning is better than losing. I think for this particular roster and this particular cap profile, this particular coach and general management staff, getting to 41 wins would have some symbolic meaning, I think. I think it would vindicate Stan Van Gundy a bit. And, you know, to me as a fan, that number 41 doesn't mean anything to me personally. But here's what it could mean. It could demonstrate that the franchise is moving in the right direction after what you described as a roller coaster season. And that's exactly what it's been. It's been a complete roller coaster. I mean, if you look at the last 15 games, you see a series of 6 out of 7 losses, and then you see a series of 6 out of 7 wins. So that's just kind of been the season in a nutshell. But what I would care about, closing the season strong, I think demonstrates to the rest of the league, and maybe more importantly to those free agents who are kind of around that mid-level exception salary, which is about what the Pistons are going to have to work with, that this is a franchise that's potentially headed in the right direction. So for those guys who are going to be on the mid-level exception, want to play for a playoff team, you know, Detroit's probably not their first choice or their first destination. And we haven't done a deep dive into the available free agents yet. But personally, that's where I want my franchise to be. I want my franchise to be able to make the pitch that says, you know, you can be a key part of the rotation of a team that wants to make a push just into the second round of the playoffs. And I think for a destination like Detroit, that's the kind of pitch you have to be able to make if you want to attract those guys, you know, to flesh out the 6, 7, 8, 9 pieces of your rotation.
Do you think 41 wins would be symbolic enough to keep Stan Van Gundy on as president of basketball ops?
I think so. And at this point, I'm going to be shocked, even if they lose 4 out of the next 5, if things change personally. I just don't see, to me, as I've thought about it these last couple of weeks, if you do that, you essentially make him a lame duck. And you're essentially saying, you know, to Stan Van Gundy, you failed, right? This experiment has failed. And then you're left without a head coach. And that's a certainty. So, you know, I don't know that that's a position I want to be in if I'm the owner. What do you think about that?
So I think I've said continuously that I think at the absolute least that Stan Van Gundy deserves to finish out his tenure as head coach of the Detroit Pistons. What I think was going to happen before this winning streak was that he would be asked to step down as president of basketball operations, would not necessarily be comfortable with the demotion and just resign his post entirely. And then that enables an entire regime change, as it were. Now, I'm not so sure. I think general manager still is a position that might be open. I think that a hostile takeover from, or a not so hostile takeover from the business side of the Pistons, and Arne Tellem is still maybe just as likely as it was before, which is to say, like, I don't know, like 30-40%. But I still struggle with how you would replace Stan Van Gundy as a head coach, how you would replace or who you would bring in as a GM, and you know, whether or not having experience as a super agent and experience on the business side of things would make you a good president of basketball ops in the case of Arne Tellem. That actually brings me to my next point. This is a couple weeks ago, but we haven't really talked about it. Chauncey's name got floated for GM not that long ago by Mark Stein. And this is something that Mark Stein has talked about for a while, actually. You were one of the people who, when we were talking about it internally, was kind of more in favor of it. And so I just wanted you to walk me through that and flesh that out a little bit for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have mixed feelings, like I think a lot of people do. You know, the potential downfall is that Chauncey fails and the departure from the franchise is analogous to what's happened with Joe Dumars. And there's a part of me that is so sentimental about Chauncey Billups that I would just as soon preempt all of that and not hire him, because I mean, he's a hero, right? I mean, really that whole starting five is, and Chauncey in particular, I think, you know, when he was brought back toward the end of his career and all that, it, you know, he's a Piston and he remembers himself as a Piston, and we remember him for his best years of his career. So to have things go sour, and that's a real possibility, you know, that pulls on my heartstrings a bit. The thing that I think he would bring to the table, though, is the presence that I think Dumars had in his best years. He as an NBA champion, as an all-star, brings something to the table that I think Dumars brought. I don't want to say mentoring, because when you're the GM, you're not a mentor, right? Because you can trade one of these guys at any given point. But I think you command respect. And I think that sort of personality and that sort of presence could potentially attract people who, you know, when it comes to making $20 million versus $18 million, there are those guys who will take the pay cut to go be part of a franchise they can believe in. So that would be the case for Chauncey Billups, I think. We don't know enough about how he evaluates players. We don't know enough about his knowledge of the salary cap and the business side. But the argument in favor would be simply that his presence and his accomplishment commands respect from the guys who are on the roster and from those guys who want to be part of a franchise like the Pistons, three championships, new arena, lots of excitement, that kind of a thing. Because of those deficiencies, though, the lack of experience, we don't know player evaluation, et cetera, you would have to flesh out the rest of that staff with staff who could definitely steer him in the right direction. Now, Tellem's name has been thrown around as a guy who could potentially complement some of the business side. So I would only be in favor of bringing Billups on if it's mutually agreed upon by everybody who's part of that team that everybody's bringing something to the table, and it's not just one guy calling all the shots who maybe doesn't quite have the experience. So that's how I'd look at Chauncey. But, you know, in a vacuum, would he be my first choice? No, he wouldn't be. But I could see a scenario in which it does work out and could work out for a long time. But with that said, it's also not hard to imagine a scenario where, like I mentioned, things don't go well and there's a parting of ways that sort of makes us all look back on the Chauncey Billups era less favorably than we would want to.
Yeah, that makes me think, actually, like, how would Joe Dumars be received, not as a front office executive or anything, but just if, you know, if he came back to LCA or if he's in the area, I wonder how he would be received by Pistons fans, kind of, you know, as the all-star guard, as the architect and constructor of the most recent championship team, or as the guy who saddled them with a bunch of long-term contracts and didn't really tear down the team as well as he could have and made the transition out of that championship team more difficult than it had to be. That's really interesting. And Chauncey, I don't know. I think Joe D's legacy gets buoyed a lot by the fact that he does have that championship on his resume as an executive. With the team that we currently have in the league that the Pistons are currently in, I don't know if in even the most rosy scenario that if were Chauncey to come in and be a front office executive, that he would win a championship and have that halo on his head that Joe D has. So I can definitely see it's more easy for me to envision a scenario in which even if Chauncey's kind of like a moderate success, that's not necessarily like enough for Pistons fans, and that relationship becomes strained. And that's definitely something that I'm not looking forward to, because, you know, I love Chauncey just as much as everybody else does. I would also hate to see his legacy stained by his inability to bring a championship to Detroit as a front office executive. So this is going to be a quick one. The end of the year is kind of it's given us a lot, I think, to talk about in retrospect, but the year is not over yet. I did want to thank everyone who reached out to me and to Ben and on the post about suggestions about what we should do in the off season. I think what we're going to do is the three main things people sounded like they were interested in, which is some light playoff previews, focusing on the Eastern Conference. I'll try and line up some guests for that, and I'm also going to try and find a good timing for that. So we'll see how that goes. We'll also talk a little bit about the draft. The Pistons have their second round pick this year. It looks like it'll be somewhere in the late 30s, early 40s, and so we'll examine some of the prospects that we think will be available around that area. It's really difficult to tell with a pick that late who will and will not be available. But we'll try and do our best and try and present some options for you guys that you guys can analyze on your own. And I want to shout out Cross-Eyed, a frequent commenter on DBB. He asked for a bargain bin free agent podcast. And I think that's definitely something the Pistons are going to be doing this offseason. They're going to be shopping in the bargain bin. And so when free agency rolls around, I think that's definitely, we'll have a bargain bin episode and look at some guys who will come in at under the mid-level or under the taxpayer mid-level or guys we think who might be interesting minimum contracts. But yeah, with the Pistons' current salary cap situation, they're going to be shopping in the bargain bin for a while. Ben, is there anything that we're missing? There anything that you think we should be covering this offseason that I haven't spoken to you about?
Over under on Jameer Nelson being a Piston next season. Speaking of bargain bins, ooh, that question occurred to me while you were talking, and it made me want to throw my pen across the room, even having to entertain it.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe he's an assistant coach. That would count, right?
it's not out of the realm of possibility. Well, this isn't a podcast topic, but I would be remiss if I did not say a little hail to the victors tomorrow night.
Boo.
My Michigan Wolverines playing for the NCAA championship. So I know that's controversial. We got people on the Spartan side, we got people on the Wolverine side, but you know who I'm cheering for. Let's put it that way.
It's so hard for me to be non-partisan in cheering for the Wolverines. It's so hard for me to do that because I'm such a diehard Spartan and I'm surrounded by Wolverines, and I would very much like for the Wolverines to be good, but I would like them to be just good enough that when they lose to the Spartans, it feels good. So yeah. This is just putting me in a really precarious scenario, but good luck against Nova tomorrow. That's going to be a really tough game.
Yeah, they might need it based on the way that based on the way things played out last night. Whew, gotta hope that Nova cools off a little bit.
Nova's actually got some guys that I think the Pistons would be lucky to get in the second round of the draft, especially Steve Henson's point guard of the future, Jalen Brunson. I think that'd be an interesting guy to get a hold of. All right, Ben.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I know we had to get you out pretty quickly today because of family obligations, and I totally understand and respect that. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Gulker. That's at BR Gulker. You can follow me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. This has been the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, and we will see you guys next week.